When you're a kid, you're forced to watch a lot of TV and movies that are edutaining. You know, a show with talking puppets singing about how you should brush your teeth twice a day. But as adults, we tend to want things either entertaining or informational. Or, if you're a public radio listener, for instance, the perfect blend of both. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we meet performers from a show up now at the KC Rep that straddles that line by creating a mystery musical about climate change. We'll hear how they turned the Copenhagen Accords into a dance and spun a touching song with subjects such as the last living lemur.
Is there no one left to love me? Oh, my love, am I the last living lemur in the world?
That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Bato Colorado Island is a man-made island in the middle of the Panama Canal and the center of environmental research on rainforest ecosystems. Churchill, Canada is the only Arctic port in the Western Hemisphere, a place where local residents encounter endangered polar bears. What these two places have in common is that they both converge on a theater stage in Kansas City. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today, a discussion about the new play, The Great Immensity, an environmental musical that is part mystery thriller, part cautionary tale about the effects of climate change. It's playing through March 18th on the Copenhagen stage of the Kansas City Repertory Theater downtown. Joining us is the lead actress of that play, Rebecca Hart, who plays twin sisters Polly and Phyllis, and Todd Servers, an actor who plays a variety of roles, including the ship chat ship spotter, which we'll talk about a little later in the program. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Now, in both of your opinions, why is this play important, beginning with you, Todd?
It's about our home. It's about the world. It's about the world we live in. And the realities and the personalities that are involved in issues of climate change, the way it gets talked about in popular culture, the way it gets talked about in the scientific community and the political community. And also, I think it has something to do with our own feelings about all of that, how we pay attention to things or ignore things or rewrite stories in our heads, what we're willing to confront in our own lives, in our own daily immediate world.
How do you feel about that, Rebecca? Is this a sort of call to arms against apathy?
That's funny. That is the word that occurred to me. That I don't know if it's a call to arms. I think one of the interesting things about the way the civilians work is that Steve Kossin, our writer-director, always says that he's interested in posing questions that don't necessarily have answers. So I don't know that it's a call to arms, but it's definitely a call to awareness. And for me, that's the biggest thing about The Great Immensity is having to come face-to-face with your own apathy or with your own tendency to compartmentalize or to not see what's right in front of you. There's a lyric in the show about getting to the point where you realize that nature and society and that forests and cities and that people like inside and outside are not separate things. There's no such thing as like one planet that's close to you and then one planet that's far away. It's all one space. It's all one thing. So it's kind of a forced consciousness, I think.
Speaking of the civilians, you mentioned the civilians. Who are the civilians and what do they have to do with this play?
The civilians are a New York-based investigative theater company founded by Steve Kossin, who is a director and now with The Great Immensity, a writer, and Michael Friedman, who's a composer. And they usually work by focusing on some kind of political issue. And usually they send out actors into the community to do tons of interviews, and then they make a play based on the text of those interviews. The Great Immensity differs in that it was actually a play that is based on interviews, but the text is all from Steve.
Had either of you done quote-unquote investigative plays before?
I had collaborated or helped Steve earlier with a workshop production of another show they were doing, but I didn't actually do any of the interviews myself. I just was brought on as an actor at the last stage.
Now, Rebecca, your character, we talk about the detachment from climate change, the detachment from environmental issues of daily, everyday people, in your character, one of them at least.
Mm-hmm.
Phyllis says she does her part for the environment by buying organic foods and listening to NPR.
Yes.
Do you feel that she exemplifies the public attitude on environmental matters?
I think that's how I mean, I'm lucky and also burdened with the fact that I play two characters who are on completely polar ends of being involved in the environment. And Phyllis has self-awareness. I mean, she knows that she's making a joke when she says that. But yeah, I think personally for me, like working on this play made me realize that I was like, it's just so easy to be like, well, and this is a central theme of the play, that like I listen to the news, I generally know what's going on, I think, oh, that's so terrible, and then I go about my day, you know. And I think it's easy to confuse, I don't know, listening to the radio or like doing something small with like an actual real immediate sense of what's happening.
So are the sisters, Polly and Phyllis, then sort of diametrically opposed in the sense that they'll listen to a broadcast such as this and then take a 3-hour shower or something like that?
And then take a 3-hour shower. I think Phyllis would do that.
Phyllis would do that. Can you compare the and contrast the lives of the sisters and how that's central?
Yeah, I think they're twin sisters. They're very, very similar in many ways. I've found in working on it. But I guess the big differences are that Phyllis is a married mother of a toddler, fairly affluent. She says, I'm glad we have enough money to buy organic. She sends her kid to a private preschool. She's generally informed, but she's much more involved with her personal relationships and her family and is much more of a person and able to be in society and in the world. And Polly is a very extreme, or becomes in the course of the play, a very extreme activist, and her whole life is about her work. And at one point she says, one day it was real, meaning her awareness of what's happening to the climate, and nothing else was real. And that's who she is.
But Polly's character comes off as sort of a convert on environmental issues, huh, because she was producing Shark Week,
yeah,
before that. And
well, yes.
What happened with Shark Week? Tell us about
with
that.
Shark Week.
Shark Week.
Polly's big betrayal, I guess, or her perceived betrayal by society is that she had a kind of like, you know, come to God moment while she was working on Shark Week, where she realizes through research that the irony of Shark Week is that the whole idea is supposed to be about how scary the oceans are because they're full of sharks and sharks are scary. But when in reality, there was a point where the oceans were full of sharks and they actually aren't so full of sharks anymore. And that points to what's happening to our climate. So she makes a piece about that, and her passion about that is what is paramount for her. And she basically gets kind of like fired from that job because of that.
And that's her point of conversion, where she,
yeah,
realizes
nobody wants to hear
the real story about Shark Week is that every week sharks are disappearing
exactly
from the ocean population. But what the public wants to see, or perhaps what producers want the public to see, is sharks swimming around looking vicious.
Right. Well, and she thinks, you know, and she starts out by thinking, oh, I'm working for the Nature Channel. I have a chance to do something wonderful. And I don't know anything about the actual Nature Channel, but in the play, it turns out to be just it's the opposite. It's like it Polly thinks, oh, this is just another entertainment. I don't want that. And they send her off to Panama to do a completely different project.
We're here with Rebecca and Todd Severus, who are both in the play The Great Immensity. Rebecca Hart, who plays the twin sisters Polly and Phyllis in this play, playing now downtown at the Copacan Stage of the Kansas City Repertory Theater. Did either of you learn anything new about the environment in preparation for this performance?
Definitely during rehearsals. The research that we had brought forward in the dramaturgy was a lot of it was new. I mean, we all know that, you know, things are getting worse, things are getting bad, there's stuff we should be doing, we shouldn't be drinking coffee out of paper cups and, you know, everything else. Specifically, things like the fact that the ocean, there's a line that Rebecca has in the play about the oceans actually were full of sharks back in the day. You would read ship logs from the 1900s and they would say that, you know, so-and-so fell off a ship and they were instantly eaten by sharks, which to us sounds like an exaggeration, but it was actually true. And the fact that the oceans now are so depopulated. the other stories that get told in the show about the story of Martha, the last passenger pigeon, and the extinction of the passenger pigeons, how that took place. And at one time, there were millions, if not billions, of them all over. And systematically, they were all brought to extinction, the loss of the golden lemur or other stories of extinction. But also the fact that right now we think of climate change as being something that is in the future, something we have to be afraid of. It's happening right now. Right now in the Arctic, trains that are bringing cargo from either to or from ships in the Arctic port have to travel very, very slowly because the permafrost, which by its very name would imply that it is permanently frozen, is in fact thawing. And so the result is that the tracks are very unstable. So the trains have to go very carefully. And there may soon come a time where the existence of the Panama Canal, which was cut so that ships could go from the Atlantic to the Pacific, will start to become less important because now ships can make that route through the Arctic Circle where the ice has started to melt. The Panama Canal becomes a bit redundant in that respect. And that's happening because we are in a situation where the Arctic ice cap is melting.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Javelani LaFall. We're talking about a new play at the KC Rep called The Great Immensity, an environmental musical with a twist. Our guests are Rebecca Hart, who plays the central characters in the play, Polly and Phyllis, and Todd Cerveris, an actor who plays a variety of roles, including the ship spotter. Try to say that fast, and we'll get more into what that is later in this broadcast. But now, the music, as we mentioned, is entertaining, but with a somber message, really. We're about to hear a number about Martha the Pigeon that you just mentioned, which is not necessarily central to the plot, but tells a story of extinction. What were your thoughts on that when you first heard it?
It's a sad song, and yet it the song itself does not have a sad beat or tempo. It's done sort of like a barbershop trio. I think my first thought was, I thought I might have known this story, but actually I don't. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was good to know some of the more specific details about the story.
Well, here's one of the musical pieces from The Great Immensity. It's titled Martha. Let's go to that right now.
Martha was a pigeon at the Cincinnati Zoo, the last survivor, a celebrity too. Her family had been the most common in the nation since disease from Europe swept the native human population. They were social birds and they preferred to mate in a crowd. Until Martha's last few years, their mass killing was allowed. In 1857, Congress gave the direction. This bird is so abundant that it needs no protection. Without a great big group, the pigeons would not mate. And soon it was too late. They went from billions to just you in the Cincinnati Zoo. The last
wild male was shot. That was one of the pieces from the new play at the KC Rep called The Great Immensity. It's called Martha, about the last breed of a passenger pigeon made extinct. And the last one, Martha, had the last residence at the Cincinnati Zoo. The play is by and large about the attitudes of citizens toward climate change and the greater environment. Speaking of the music, the musical numbers, Rebecca and Todd, are quite comical, but also quite serious. Can you talk about that juxtaposition and its role in the play and how it helps with the play's overall presentation,
Rebecca? Well, I've thought about it a lot because just the way the play is written, my characters aren't in most of the musical numbers, and so I get to kind of hang out and listen to them. And I think that that's actually one of the things that is so genius about the way the civilians work, is that they always seem to write these very lively, perky, sort of ironic pieces of music, or I guess Michael Friedman does, about very deep and very somber subjects. And it just works. I'm not even sure why it works. It's just, it makes it easy to listen to and to digest and isn't,
it doesn't make it easy to memorize.
Well, yes, I noticed that. But it's entertaining and it kind of gets under your skin in a way that it might not if it was like a big dirge. And I also, like, listening to Martha made me want to say that one of the things I think is so great about the civilian's work is that it's like it's a musical for people who don't necessarily like musicals. Mm. Like, you don't come to it expecting, I don't know, Cats, you know. But I mean, I grew up playing music and being an actor, and I never wanted to put them together. And this, now I do in this way, I think works so well.
And that's the irony. You sit out most of the musical numbers, much all of the musical numbers, but you're a musician.
Yes, I have a double life. And I, as musicals have begun to change, I'm doing a lot of work that's like plays with music in them. And often I sing. This one I don't. And I think that's one of, it's a very smart choice, because I think Polly Phyllis, or at least Phyllis, is kind of, it's us. It's Phyllis's journey through this strange new universe. And the songs are part of the information that's coming at her.
Looking at the musical numbers, is there something that you would do different, Rebecca, when you sit on the sidelines as a musician and look at the musical numbers and how they're played out on stage?
No, really, there isn't. I mean, I think the simplicity, it's very simple instrumentation, very simple harmonies, and it works in its simplicity, and I really like that. I think it would be sort of, the civilians always tread a little like line between like really strange and really normal, and I think it would be way too strange if it was like fully orchestrated. I mean, that's just me. But I love the way the music works in this play.
There's a centerpiece musical number that uses the phrase, "The world is wide, the world is so small." What does that phrase mean to both of you when discussing environmental issues?
I think on a literal level, it means just that, that it's there are all sorts of possibilities and all sorts of things that we haven't considered, and yet they all impact each other. The fact that the same ship that is loading wheat in Churchill is offloading it in Shanghai and is passing through any number of waters and any number of ports along the way to get there.
Do you think mentioning these particular locales, these ports, such as the Barra Colorado Islands and the Churchill port up in the Arctic, and to some extent Auckland, which is a fictional seat of a climate change conference, do you think mentioning actual cities, actual real-life places, takes us beyond the conceptual aspect of environmental climate change?
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. You need to know that these things are rooted, and that's the genius of a lot of the work that Michael and Steve are doing in this piece, is that they're not making it easy for you. They're not making things imaginary. They're not making things safe. They're putting it right there in front of you. You know, taking very thorny pieces of texts like the Kyoto Accords and setting them to music, which doesn't really sound like a promising idea until you see the way they do it.
Yeah.
And
when it's
sings.
Sung, you just understand it in a way that you wouldn't have otherwise. And for me, at least, just knowing that, you know, Barra Colorado Island is a real place that I personally had never known anything about before working on this, that Churchill is a real place, and that the way that they're dealt with in the play came from Michael and Steve going to those places, filming tons of footage, talking to tons of people. It makes it very real.
And you see that footage, too. You know, mm-hmm. It's not just that you hear the names of these places. You see the photos of the things that they're talking about.
Yeah, it's a multimedia piece, so there's, like, giant video projections, and all of that stuff is, at least most of it, I think, is really footage that was taken on Michael and Steve's travels.
And speaking of the multimedia aspects of it, Ship Chat, Todd.
You got to love the Ship Chat.
Tell us all about Ship Chat and what a ship spotter is and how this plays into the arc of the play.
It's a good question, actually. Ship spotting is much like train spotting or plane spotting. Ship spotting is a hobby undertaken by people who are just fascinated with, I suppose, the ways that the small grasp that we have when we look at one ship in a port of the reality of that ship's life. And then as they follow the ship all around the globe, they know that that very same ship that they saw in, you know, Staten Island is now in Belgium, and now it's moved, or maybe not Belgium, maybe the Netherlands, and then it's moved to Greece, and then it's gone on to Shanghai, and then come around through the Panama Canal back up the coast.
And it's just online, right? That you track the ships online.
Yeah, they all the it's a little bit more probably than you need to know, but they have a radio system where they all are in touch with each other. So the way that they know where each ship is by each ship registering its location to another ship that then gets posted online.
And you did your research, so to speak,
yeah,
to become a ship chatter and a ship spotter.
I paid $25 for the iPhone app, and I'm I'm tracking the actual Great Immensity, which is an actual ship that they saw when they were in Churchill.
And speaking of which, a lot of locales mentioned in this play take place at seaports. Even the name of this play is taken from the Great Immensity. Mm-hmm. Was that deliberate? And what is the Great Immensity? Tell us about what the Great Immensity actually is.
The Great Immensity is a cargo ship. It's 197 meters long, and it's currently anchored off the coast. Actually, no, it's on its way from somewhere in China to, I think it's on its way to Shanghai right now. It's a cargo ship that is one of any number of thousands that are traveling all over the world.
And I guess the anecdote goes that Michael and Steve were in Churchill,
yeah,
and it sailed by them, and they looked up at the title of the ship on the side of the ship, and they went, that's the title of our play. Because it's just one of those wonderful poetic accidents that it is the real title of a ship, and it's also, so I can't think of a better way to describe just the issue of what's happening to our environment. It's the Great Immensity. It is the big bigness. There's nothing bigger than that.
We're with Rebecca Hart, who plays twin sisters Polly and Phyllis in the play The Great Immensity, along with Todd Siveris, an actor who plays a variety of roles in this environmental musical. KC, have you seen this play, The Great Immensity? If so, what information stuck with you? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. What made a difference in your personal feeling about climate change? And would a musical about climate change do the trick for you to get your information? 816-235-2888. Once again, that's 816-235-2888. You can also reach us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Rebecca and Ty, what do you think of the concept of edutainment? Because that's what seems like this is. What do you think of that concept? You say, oh, my God,
that
with,
word
with just a roll of the eye. Tell us about that.
I don't know. That was just purely spontaneous. I mean, yeah, if someone came to me and said, would you like to go see an edutaining musical, I would say no, thank you. But something that has always just continues to shock me about the civilians is that they just seem to keep doing these things that you would think would be impossible. Almost every show I've seen, like their play In the Footprint, I was like, I'm going to go to Brooklyn and see a musical about whether or not they're going to build a stadium in the Atlantic Yards. Like, and it was riveting. You know, I don't know how that happens. But there's something about the mix of like really good documentary with songs, and I just buy it, you know, so it works.
I think simply smart is fun. Yeah. Smart is funny. And we all like to watch documentaries on the Nature Channel and the Discovery Channel. We're all fascinated by, you know, Deadliest Catch or, you know, programs about how things work. And, you know, it's fascinating to us. And if you can find a way just to get that entree in, it's terrific.
But did being on the ground floor of climate change and research about rainforests and tundra, which are respectively different ecological systems, and getting into the nitty-gritty of that, did that change the perception of what you see on the Nature Channels and Discovery Channels of the world? And how did you come out after being part of this?
Sure. You know, my first thought, I was watching the Discovery Channel and Man vs. Wild came on and Bear Grylls was being dropped into the Arctic. And my first thought was, I wonder what part of the Arctic it is, because, of course, it's getting smaller and smaller. I wonder how hard it is for him to get out. The impact that it's had is both on a grand and small scale. Trying to be more aware. You know, since I've been in KC, I'm staying at a place where they don't have recycling. Mm-hmm. Back at in my apartment in New York, we have one place we can just put all the recycling. So I was never exactly aware of how much trash versus recycling I have. Now I'm actually having to take all of my recycling and take it down to the theater and recycle it there. And so I'm aware of how much that I throw out that is reusable. I'm actually measuring it versus how much is actual garbage.
What about you, Rebecca?
I'm nodding. You can't see me out there, but I am nodding in agreement with this. It's just, you know, I guess two things. I mean, you can't finish listening to a speech that someone makes about all the gyre in the Pacific Ocean where all of our trash is swimming around and floating around, and then like happily go off and, you know, get an entirely disposable lunch and throw it out. Like it doesn't happen. So I guess it's just in having to pay attention to this. There's a line in the play about that Polly says about how An Inconvenient Truth won an Oscar, and then in the years following, Americans as a whole cared less about climate change. And I think like a year ago, if someone had said that to me, I would have been like, what do you mean? I still care about it. But I realized in doing this play that I had sort of just put it to the side.
That was a shocking fact that you do find out in that play. We're going to go to Regina in Lee's Summit. Regina, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I saw this play on Sunday afternoon, and what struck me, the particular character that struck me, was the young ambassador character, because she reminded me of how passionate I used to be when I was young. Now, as a mother of teenagers, it frightened me a little bit, but as a middle-aged person, I'm more inclined to go, I'll support that with a check, and I've done my duty, and I'm finished. But in the play, the lengths that that character went to, and to support something she was so passionate about, that's what stuck with me when I left the play. Mm.
Thank you very much for your contribution to this conversation, Regina. Who are the Earth Ambassadors? The young ambassador Regina just mentioned.
The Earth Ambassadors are fictional, but in the world of the Great Immensity, they are one teenager from every country in the UN who's been chosen to sort of represent their country and I guess are traveling around learning as much as they can around the world from environmental activists and from scientists so that they can kind of take the information back to their homes and try to get people's awareness up. They're young, passionate, committed, smart, environmental budding activists.
Our guests are Rebecca Hart, who plays the twin sisters Polly and Phyllis, and Todd Severus, an actor who plays a variety of roles in The Great Immensity. The play runs through March 18th at the Copacan stage of the Kansas City Repertory Theater in downtown Kansas City. We're going to take a break. When we return, more with the cast of The Great Immensity, and we'll hear about some statistical variances in the form of music. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. If you're wondering about the ridiculously mild weather we've been having this winter in Kansas City, the KC Repertory Theater believes some of the answers may be found on stage. We now continue our discussion about the new play, The Great Immensity, an environmental musical that is part mystery thriller, part cautionary tale about the effects of climate change. It's playing through March 18th at the Copacan stage of the Kansas City Repertory Theater downtown. Joining us is the lead actress, Rebecca Hart, who plays the two central characters of the play, twin sisters Polly and Phyllis, and Todd Severus, an actor who plays a variety of roles, including the ship spotter. I like saying that. We're about to listen to one of the musical numbers, Margin of Error, that describes what goes through someone's mind when they're trying to make sense of who feels what about global climate change and what the scientific data says. What went through your mind, Todd, when you first read the lyrics, and what did you do to prepare for the performance?
A lot of tongue twisters and actor mouth stretching exercises to get all these words and terms out. The song you're referring to is a series of statistics that sort of roughly describe the public's general feelings about climate change and you know, whether it's real, how much of an impact we're having, that kind of thing. I guess what went through my mind was how much fun I've never had so much fun with statistics.
Right. Rebecca, it strikes me as the best use of useless data that I've ever heard. What did you think of when you first saw the lyrics and first heard it performed?
I agree with you on that. It is the one musical number that I am in, and we have to dance, which is not my forte. So mostly what was going through my head was just, I have to learn where to step and which numbers I'm supposed to be saying. So in a way, in trying to get all the technicalities of the performance down, I haven't ingested the data yet. So I'm kind of excited to just listen to it.
Well, let's let our audience ingest the data right now. In hearing one of the pieces from the new play at the KC Rep called The Great Immensity, it's called Margin of Error. Let's take a listen.
The polls show 57% of Americans think something's happening to the climate.
91% think it's somewhat serious. 40% think it's somewhat important.
41% think that it's over-exaggerated.
21% think that it's under-exaggerated.
44% think that it should be more of a priority, but not if it costs too much and less than healthcare or the economy.
36% think it's caused by humans.
Or maybe 47%.
Or 51% maybe think it's a combination of human and natural causes.
50% favor regulation, 20% or maybe less
or more
seek action, 10% believe the snow they shoveled last winter precludes any chance of climate change, 20% aggressively reject catastrophic outcomes as a possibility,
60% categorize themselves as tuned out and confused
with a 6-point margin of error.
That was one of the pieces from the new play at the KC Rep called The Great Immensity. The piece is called Margin of Error, and it's about the convoluted, confusing attitudes of citizens toward climate change. That says it all, doesn't it, Rebecca?
Yeah, I was thinking as I was listening to it that one of the biggest changes in my mind from working on this piece is how surreal it is to me to hear percentages like this that have to do with like whether or not someone thinks that global warming exists or whether it's real or whether anything needs to be done about it. It's so odd to me now, having spent all this time sort of secondhand with all these scientists and all this scientific data, to like think of it as a matter of belief or like something that you have a choice about, or like, should we do something or should we not do something? That is the strangest thing.
And the satirical approach brings home the reality of how urgent this is in some areas, Todd.
Yeah, the issue becomes more about the debate of it rather than the actual topic itself. You know, it's staged like a faux tango. Mm-hmm. And somehow the debate and the consideration and the weighing of things becomes the event as opposed to what you're actually talking about.
Which I think is so great because the whole point of the song is like the way Americans are dancing around mm-hmm. the issue. Mm-hmm. That like that it's right there staring us in the face and we're like, well, I don't know. Should we do something? Should we not do something? How much of something should we do? Should we take action? Should we just talk about it? It's so weird. And to do a tango makes total sense to me at this point.
We are going to give away that Rebecca was actually doing a tango step as the musical song number went off on air. So
sense memory.
That's a treat. Sense memory. What do you say then to people who may think the play is too preachy about environmental matters? What do both of you respond to a response like that?
I think the play works really hard to try to show the irony of people who have a professed sense of concern and yet really don't do a whole lot, or the thorny issue of how do you do something? What do you do? How do I change the world? How do I affect the world? It's a hard question to ask, and I think it tries to be fair about all of that.
Rebecca?
I think what I would say, and this goes back to sort of the idea of Steve saying that what he's doing is posing questions that don't necessarily have a concrete answer. I think the this is too preachy response is I understand it. And I think it's easy for people to hear a message like this and think that they're being attacked personally, that like you person, you're not doing enough, like get off your butt, you know, and that's not what's happening. I think that like we need to kind of get past that sense of personal guilt, which is not useful, and get more to like really just trying to listen to and ask the questions and see what happens.
but it does elicit a certain amount of discomfort on what the individual can actually do with the environmental changes going the way they are. For instance, Rebecca, your play, your role, the twin sisters Polly and Phyllis, both interact with this teenage Earth ambassador who's very disillusioned and has some pretty grim misgivings about the environment. Some of the most emotionally driven numbers and monologues in the play. Tell us about how that unfolds.
The relationship with the young
activist. Earth ambassador.
I think, well, for Polly, it's like, I hesitate to say this because it makes it sound too simple, but it's, in a way, it's an answered prayer, because Polly is at rock bottom when you meet her. She is so disillusioned and destroyed and feels very powerless. And then there's this kind of jolt, this infusion of hope and youthful energy through Julie, the Earth Ambassador, who, even though she is sad and disillusioned herself, is the one who says, I don't want to believe it's hopeless. I refuse to believe it's hopeless.
Whereas Phyllis's reaction is the antithesis of that.
Yes.
She's tired of hearing the monkey sounds. She just wants to find her sister and get back to
Whole Foods. Well, that's, I think, a really important part of this is that Phyllis, Phyllis cares about pretty much one thing, and it's her sister, who she loves more than anybody in the world. And kind of the point that Polly and the activists of the play are trying to make is that you don't get to make that distinction. You don't get to say, well, I care about this tiny portion of reality and not about the rest of it. Like, the rest of it can go save itself. We're all responsible for everybody. We're all connected to everybody. And Phyllis gets very angry about that towards the end for her, when she is forced by another character to think. He says, think about the future, think about it, and be honest. It makes her very, very angry and very defensive, because she has to realize that she hasn't been thinking about that stuff at all.
How eco-friendly is this play? Have you guys been coached on how you're using halogen lights or anything like that?
God,
you brought the recycling bin to the stage,
yeah,
Todd.
I think we've all sort of, on our own, taken our steps to try to be as eco-friendly as we can. You know, it's interesting, during rehearsals, one point I think that bears mentioning in the play, our songs are not dirges. This is not a weep for the world play.
No.
There is, during the show, Steve was very strident about saying, this is not a depressing song. This is, you know, we've got to look for what we can do. If we were there to sort of sing the epitaph of the world, that would be a quick and sad show, and that's not what we're there for. I think the idea is to get people going and to get people realizing that it's not too late. We're not standing here at the end of the inevitable. We're starting things up.
The point is the opposite of that. The point is wake up and see the wonder of what is all around us and how it matters.
Mm-hmm. Did the use of video in the play serve as a way to reduce waste or reduce time spent? Or was it more something to advance the discussion and advance the plot of the play?
Definitely the latter. I think, it's visually a beautiful show. It's fascinating to watch. And I had a great time during our technical rehearsals. I was able to sit out in the audience and watch all the scenes that I wasn't in, and as most of us did. And things just kept getting layered one on top of the other. And it never stops rolling. It's really a rich visual scene.
Rebecca, was that a challenge, playing off of the video on a live stage?
Yeah, I've never done that before. I mean, Todd and I have a couple of scenes where we have to speak to each other and we can't see each other at all. We're in different locations. We're looking at video cameras and not at another person. We can just hear each other. And that was new for me.
So we're sort of memorizing when we're supposed to give looks of shock and response.
It's different. But I think for me, like, also just the fact that there's so much Skype and video chat in this play kind of speaks to the whole the world is wide, but the world is so small thing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can be in Churchill and I can be in Panama and we can be making things happen and having a relationship together. Mm-hmm. Polly and the ship spotter have never met in person, but their connection is one of the most important in the play.
So the world premiere was here in KC. What's next?
No idea.
You tell me.
I'll stay with the show as long as I can. I hope it goes somewhere.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the play itself and like what will happen to the environment itself. We don't know.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. People always talk about the inactivity of Hamlet in the play. Like, why doesn't he just – the answer is simple. Just kill the king. Turns out it's kind of hard to kill the king. Mm-hmm. And I think that the same thing is true with this. You know, why not just fix the environment? Turns out it's kind of hard, but it's definitely something that's worth paying attention to.
The Great Immensity is an environmental musical that is part mystery thriller, part cautionary tale about the effects of climate change. It's playing through March 18th at the Copenhagen Stage of the Kansas City Repertory Theater downtown. Our guests are members of the cast, Rebecca Hart and Todd Cerveris. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.